This is Dev Propulsion Labs, the podcast about building successful developer tools, hosted by Evil Martians.
Hi, everyone. I'm very thrilled to introduce today's guest. Today, we're welcoming Sam Bagwat to Dev Propulsion Labs, our podcast about building successful developer tools. And Sam is one of those people that is actually a true testament to building successful developer tools, that it's actually possible. So Sam is the co-founder and CEO of Master AI, an open source TypeScript framework for building AI agents, which is quickly gaining traction in the developer community. But before that, Sam co-founded Gatsby, the React-based web framework that transformed how developers actually build websites. So after Gatsby was acquired by Netlify, Sam and his team set their sights on the emerging AI field, and that's how Master was born. Sam recently took Master through YC. So winter 2025 batch, the guy stood out among a cohort of heavily focused AI agents. Was it heavily focused on AI?
Very focused.
And we'll dive more into that. And one of the cool things about Sam is that he wrote Principles of Building AI Agents. I actually have a copy in my apartment. I got to set it. It's a practical guide for developers entering the space of AI agents. So I think many will benefit from that. So let's dive right into it. What a journey from web frameworks to AI agents. It's like two different worlds, but so many parallels. And it feels like the excitement is back. The excitement of building is back. How do you find this transition? What is the most surprising thing? And in general, what do you think about it?
The great thing about open source is when you're in a place that you have a community that's really excited about building things using the tool that you've made. And I think, like, you know, this is kind of one of my biggest takeaways from the last decade that I've, you know, spent in the open source JavaScript community. One of the things that, like, we saw with Gatsby was that people were building Gatsby sites as a way to learn React, especially, like, you know, and that started, you know, early on as, like, tons of folks were just replatforming their SaaS apps, and before they wanted to replatform from, let's say, Backbone or whatever, you just kind of want to play around with React and kind of, like, what is this new component-based thing? You know, I just want to take us all back to, you know, 2016 or 2017, where, like, it was very controversial, the encapsulation of, like, HTML, CSS, and JavaScript in one kind of, like, JSX paradigm, virtual DOM, all these things were, like, very controversial. And so I think, like, a lot of folks were very intrigued and curious about React, but they wanted to see what it was like for themselves and build a blog or a portfolio site, which, you know, we all have one or a couple of these things, you know, floating around. And I think, like, right now we're in a very similar time with AI and agents, in that, you know, for a lot of folks, it's been obviously floating around in the ecosystem for a while, but it's finally now at a place where, as a, you know, full stack developer, it feels like, hey, now I might be able to actually play in this world. I may be actually be able to do something. And, like, maybe there's a couple projects on the horizon that it feels like, you know, it feels like someone's going to take the responsibility for, and someone's going to, you know, build this new assistant into our UI, or, you know, or build this new agent feature, or whatever is sort of, like, floating around the ecosystem and in at work. For these things tend to be floating around the ether. And so I think right now it's just it just feels, you know, but like, the excitement around AI feels even stronger. I mean, for React, obviously, we as, like, front end folks were, like, very excited about it, but now it's sort of like the excitement is kind of, like, throughout the ecosystem. It's just a great time to be building.
You mentioned that you were building AI powered CRM called Kepler and found yourselves having to roll all the AI bits yourselves, right? So agentic workflows, Evols, Rags, and so on. Was there a moment that, like, took you over the edge and you were like, okay, stop this, I'm going to build a new framework that will solve this problem? Was there a specific moment that you can think of?
I want to sort of say before we talk, like, go into that kind of, like, moment, that so we had sold Gatsby to Netlify in 2023, and then we had kind of, like, my co-founder Shane Abbey and I, we'd all kind of left Netlify at different points afterwards, and so we thought that we were kind of done with developer tools. We thought we were going to go and do something else, you know, we had a great time, but like, you know, maybe it was time for something new. And we were building a CRM, and then we started building the AI parts of the CRM, and we were building some of these kind of same, many of the same abstractions, agents and workflows and RAG. And thing that just surprised us was we thought, you know, and keep in mind that at that time, like we hadn't gone very deep into AI, but we just sort of figured that someone else had figured this stuff out. And like, it was, you know, pretty straightforward to build a lot of these abstractions in JavaScript. And then when we dived into it, we found that was very much not the case. And while there was some really good stuff like AI SDK, like a lot of it was just not what we would want. And we were like, and as we started building it, we were like, you just kind of have this moment. We just kind of had this moment where we like, we're all looking at each other and we're like, gosh, like, you know, we could do a really good
Someone's
job doing
do
this.
It. Someone's gonna do it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also this moment where, you know, it's not like you can just sort of have to one thing and do the other thing. It's like you gotta like jump on the ship and like sail off to the new thing, the new land, and like, you know, not look back and see the shore. You're gonna stay on the shore and you're gonna like live the life that you thought you were gonna live, or you're just gonna jump on the boat and you're gonna like go do something new. And there's not like a halfway in between somewhere.
It's tough though, because the framework space is getting crowded, you know, because like there's LangChain, there is Llama Index, there's all these other tools. You have very clear positioning, right? That's focused on TypeScript, very explicit, observability, whatever. Was there ever a question like we need to build another one, or it was just very clear that, you know, you need to create something of your kind of level? What, you know, yeah. What I mean? Like you're used to a certain level of developer tooling, and you just wanted to build something that is up to par, or what was your stance on that?
I mean, I think there's a couple of things. Like, you know, there's sort of the outside in view and there's the inside out view. You know, and the inside out view is the view that you have when you're like really deep in the weeds, and the outside in view is you're sort of like looking down at the world from like, you know, 10,000 feet or 30,000 feet. The inside out view was, gosh, like it doesn't seem like there's anything that is really made for like the TypeScript folks. One of our retrospectives looking back at Gatsby is that, like, you know, I think we had a pretty good developer experience, and Next had an incredible developer experience, and they sort of beat us on developer experience. But then you sort of like look at like LangChain, and it's just sort of like way down here. It's, you know, there's good, there's better, and then there's like, this isn't even really in the same vicinity. So like, I think like we were just kind of like, yeah, I think like maybe from the outside in view, it's like, well, there's all these things, but like our inside view was like, gosh, A, none of them are like TypeScripting, and B, like, it's just not, the quality is like not what we would want. And so like, it was just clear to us that the something new needed to exist.
I know that there is this kind of like framework fatigue, you know, people are tired of adopting new technology, and now with AI, it feels really hard to pick, you know, okay, what tool am I going forward with? Do you feel like it's a challenge for you? Is it hard for you to get developers to adopt Mastra? Are there any kind of insights that you find along the way in that?
That moment when we started building Mastra, that was like right at the beginning of October. You know, it took us a couple of iterations to really get it right. And the first thing that we did was kind of this, it was more of like a visual first thing rather than a code first thing. And so we spent 3 weeks on that. And then we sort of showed up to NextConf, and we were showing it to a few folks, and we just kind of got the, oh, that's nice kind of like reactions. We were like, I think we've missed somehow. And we realized it was like so we, you know, 3 weeks, did another 3 week cycle, and then like kind of like relaunched, and then it was like, okay, it's kind of the right thing. But then like we saw that we had sort of an initial burst of users, but then like we didn't have a lot of people sticking around, and then we sort of looked at what we built with fresh eyes, and we just saw the, you know, hey, you know, there's a lot of areas where we could make this like sharper and crisper. And so we just sort of started going methodically through that. That was kind of the next couple of months for us. And then you know, we came to YC, to SF. We all were in person in SF for 3 months starting in January, right? And so then we started getting, you know, just better, sort of like more in-depth feedback too from like other startups in our batch. And so then when we launched kind of for the second time in mid-February, we just sort of immediately, I think we fixed all the issues, and we've made some really cool stuff. And then we kind of like immediately went viral, and we've sort of been growing very, very quickly since then.
What would be your biggest insight from your YC journey?
I mean, the first one is that like YC is great. Like I worked at sort of like three YC startups before Gatsby. We applied to Gatsby with YC, but YC didn't understand open source then, and we didn't really understand how to sort of like pitch YC. And so like YC is great because it puts you in a place where you have a lot of other really talented folks around you that are all trying to sort of do whatever it takes. And like sometimes whatever it takes is like a little bit out of the box. And so I think like the most important thing, like the fundamentals are all the same. It's like, you know, listen to your users. And like in YC, like a lot of the other startups using us were on this like YC Slack with us. And like, you know, we just like, it was like Shane, Abby and I, and then like the, you know, the two co-founders of the other startup, and they were like constantly like, hey, like, I did this and it didn't work. And like, oh, we documented that poorly. And then, you know, so we'd like fix it. It was just like this constant stream of feedback, these conversations that we'd have all the time. And I think we were able to like improve and iterate a lot faster because we were like just talking to them so much. We brought them over to our apartment to do whiteboarding sessions where like we'd just be like, hey, can you like whiteboard out what you're trying to build with AI? And like sometimes they were building stuff in Python too. Like it wasn't like necessarily like, some of them were like onboarding sessions, but some of them were just like, we were trying to understand like, you know, what they were doing and like, you know, have a conversation with them. Like talking to your users is like, and like really like doing whatever you can to unblock them is probably the biggest thing. And then the other things are kind of just like being creative in how you're able to tell other people about the things that you're building. So like Shane just started, Shane was living, so Abby and I were in an apartment together. And then Shane was a few minutes walk away with his family. And so Shane would walk over, it was a few minutes walk. And so he just started doing these walking videos and talking about, you know, RAG or evals or whatever. And so he just started posting them on LinkedIn. And like people liked them because, you know, this is the stuff that we were thinking about all the time. But like, you know, like it was worse in the beginning of this like huge AI wave and everybody wants to know and learn. And he was just a very like approachable guy. And he was like breaking stuff down in like a very understandable way. And it was really good content. And so we just kept like talking more and more about like all the different parts of AI engineering. And I wrote this book and we just found that the best way to like, you know, tell people about Monster was just kind of like talk about AI engineering and like, you know, anyone who's interested in AI engineering will then just kind of like learn about Monster. So I think like those are the two probably most important things that we learned in YC.
That's very cool. You also kind of mentioned in your post that over half of the badge, like over half of the startups in the badge is some kind of vertical agent. And you kind of see the whole industry taking a new shape, you know, because those startups are going to become the big companies that dominate the space because they were ahead of the game. Has that impacted how you envision Maestra, how you position Maestra, or any insights on that front?
I mean, I think a lot of it hasn't. And, you know, there's a lot of this companies in YC, but there's a lot of these companies around the world. I think I chatted with two or three of them that were in Toronto or Berlin, you know, just like earlier today, people building, you know, agents and assistants for various types of industries. In some ways, I think like that's a really good, you know, use case for Monster because the whole company is sort of being built around this new agent paradigm or this new AI paradigm. We also see folks that are sort of, you know, larger companies that are launching an AI agent product or an assistant product. Maybe it generates some reports. Maybe it's like a chat sidebar that like accesses, that helps kind of like make sense of the documents that, or like other information that people are storing in the system. But I think that like this new type of company is also a very good type of company.
Do you see any common challenges that those kind of, let's say, agent companies are running into? What's the biggest challenge?
I think it differs depending on the type of company. I'll just give a couple of examples. So there's one company that was in our batch that is building like a software for veterinarians that does like these kind of like transcription and like generates action items. And you can just imagine that, I mean, with like veterinarians, you don't have a lot of the like health privacy concerns you'd have for, you know, human patients, right? But at the same time, it's like actionable in a lot of the same ways. And sort of like LLMs are pretty good with these types of transcripts. And so like, I think like their challenge they're having is kind of just kind of educating their kind of like market on like, hey, this is the workflow that you would have if you have like an AI assistant as part of your veterinary clinic. There's other folks using Mostra where like if you are sort of ingesting, like I can think of one other company that's ingesting sort of these like 100-page aerospace parts, and they're trying to generate like these electrical diagrams. They'll like inject or ingest maybe like
Wow.
five different like part PDFs, right? Just like descriptions, and then try to like, hey, this is like an 8-watt, 7-amp, or yeah, I'm not really an electrical engineer, but like, this is how you would arrange them in like a circuit. They're kind of combining the physical world with very large and complex documents and like complex diagrams, and trying to extract sort of like real scientifically relevant or like engineering like relevant information out of there. It's not just sort of composing text. If you like, there's some real physical constraints. There's people doing like CAD diagram generation where they're generating these like 3D part things, and it's like combining physics with some sort of combining like a description of it. So I think it's like, like there's somewhere they're sort of pushing the boundary of like what's possible with the LLMs, or like this like combination of LLMs plus physical software. And there's others where the challenge is like the user interaction paradigm and familiarity. But I think like, it's interesting to like, as we talk to the folks using us, just seeing kind of how they're figuring out how to kind of build this thing that works well, and then kind of get it out into the hands of their users.
So those two startups you mentioned, they actually use Mostra to build their tools, or yeah,
That's right, yeah.
awesome. I also wanted to ask about the license that you used, because you mentioned that you wanted to use Elastic V2, right? And I quote, "Let users do whatever they want with Mostra, but prevent AWS from grabbing it." How do you find that balance between being kind of open source, having those open source values versus those big guys trying to come at you, at your technology? How did you approach this decision?
Everything in the space is so new, and so we wanted to kind of like come out of the gate with something that would be sort of like power users to build whatever they wanted. But also, it used to be that you got sort of some time to build an open source company and to build a project, and like maybe like the bright lights weren't shining on you yet, and you got to like, and I think that could be good or bad. Like you might be toiling away for, a year or two, and like not really sure if anyone wants the thing that you're building. Whereas like, Mostra in seven, 8 months has kind of gotten like has kind of grown so quickly, sort of much faster than Gatsby, than Gatsby did in the, in the first couple of years of the project, right? So like, but at the same time, that like because AI is so big, you are kind of attracting those like lights, and so you want to be like a little bit careful and cautious, and just see like what the landscape is like as you're building and developing. So that was kind of our approach. We did the Hacker News launch post, and yeah, I think there was maybe one comment about that in the Hacker News launch post, and I kind of responded politely to the commenter. It was like, yeah, I mean, I did mention that in the post, and like it wasn't sort of like a highly upvoted. We have heard from like a person or two that was like, hey, my company has like a really strong stance on licenses or whatever. But like it has been, I think like generally folks have been, as we've kind of explained the logic and the reasoning of how we're thinking about this, like people have generally been very supportive in the community, which we've appreciated for sure.
I think that one of the traits that you can have as a successful DevTool builder is like setting boundaries. And that's an example of doing that, and that allows for sustainable future for you and your users. So makes perfect sense to me. What's your attitude towards vibe coding, and do you use any code gem?
Yeah, I mean, I'm you usually see me in Cursor or Windsurf, vibe coding, or docs or vibe coding a feature or two. Especially like when we build examples, like that's the easiest thing to vibe code, right? Because like we build examples all the time. Like, hey, here's this detective game, where like the characters' conversations are driven by the LLM or whatever. And it's a really fun kind of throwaway type example, right? Like we're not actually launching this game, so a lot of people can play it. We just want to make a demonstration of that. That's like the easiest kind of like thing to vibe code, because that like at the end of the day, it's only ever going to be an example. But that said, like, prototyping is really is really valuable. You know, I think like if you talk to Abhi, he vibe codes most of the things, and then he'll go back and the thing though is it's like being in a conversation with somebody else. Like everyone's been in those conversations where someone's just like droning on and the other people are not really listening. Or like those conversations where you're just like really in tune with the other person and just like bouncing ideas. And the thing that is like, you just need to be like very in tune with the LLM. And as soon as it starts going off the rails, you just like nip it in the bud. If you just like sort of like tune out and like go browse Reddit or something, like, I mean, it's going to go off the rails, and then you're not going to notice it went off the rails. And you're going to go back and like, it'll still probably make you faster, but like you'll be like less attentive to the whole process. So I think that's kind of like our gut take is like vibe code, but like vibe code in like high attuneness.
So I want to switch gears a little bit and do a quick lightning round. Just quick questions, quick answers. What's the most underrated feature of Master that developers tend to overlook?
I would say our RAG APIs. We have sort of built this kind of unified API for a bunch of different PG vector, like Pinecone, Quadrant, like a lot of the different vector databases with like a unified like upsert, create index, query, metadata creation. Like lots of people are using it, but people aren't necessarily talking about it as much. So it's just kind of like, hey, this works great. Like I like the API. You know, stuff like tools and memory and RAG and workflows. Like I think those people like really like those features, but I think people talk about those features a lot too. So
what's the best advice you've gotten from another DevTool founder during your journey?
We've watched Vercel for a very long time, and always Vercel is a company, and Guillermo in particular is kind of just focused on great developers, creating great developer experience. You know, it's not like I think there's like a particular thing or quote. It's just more just this like focus on what is the simplest version? How do you reduce friction? How do you make it as easy and like for people to do what they want, yet make it as extensible as possible? I think if you ask me what DevTools founder have you learned most from, it's got to have been Guillermo. The other thing I would say is that the other person I put up there is Mitchell Hashimoto. And the reason I would put Mitchell up there is because Terraform did something incredible that and underrated with their provider model. This idea of a unified syntax that works across different cloud services, but where you have like one abstraction that would be have implementations in 10 or 15 different cloud services. That way you have a unified syntax that developers can learn. Yet at the same time, they can, in Terraform's case, like you could be on AWS or Azure or whatever cloud you want, and like the same syntax will work the same. And we've taken a lot of that lesson to Mastra with how we think about workflows, how we think about RAG, how we think about the different, objects in Mastra.
What's the biggest technical rabbit hole you fell into while building Mastra?
The biggest migration we've done so far is we just released Workflows vNext. That sort of like kept the same syntax as our earlier workflow engine, but it added the capability to go multi-engine, and then it removed some of the syntax that had caused problems. And I think that was like probably the biggest kind of like migration that we've done so far. And it was like kind of, and Workflows is so core to our product. It was like, it's kind of painful to like bite the bullet of like, hey, we're going to have to, go at this for like, 5 or 6 weeks before we can really cut or release on it. But we just knew it was the right thing to do, and we had to do it. And so we went ahead and did that.
What's one capability you wish LLMs had that would make agent frameworks 10 times better?
I'm going to cheat and say two things: reasoning and tool use. So we're still in the midst of sort of this like switch from, let's say, the Claude 3.5s to the Claude 3.7s, right? And to where the LLM is just giving you a response to where it's actually able to think through its response and kind of iterate on it. I think we have not sufficiently built that reasoning the model's reasoning capabilities in frameworks as well as end user applications. We haven't yet fully come to terms with that. It's like a month old, two months old to really be productionized. So the second thing is tool use. This is what's driving a lot of the hype around MCP. It's just the sense of like, hey gosh, like it would be, the models would be so much more powerful if they had access to be able to actually do things. And by the way, like, can't we just create like these abstractions to bundle a lot of useful capabilities and give them to the models in a unified way? So I would say, reasoning and tool use.
My final question is, what makes you feel great about what you're building right now?
showing up and like logging onto Discord and seeing all the excitement that that the folks in the community have. I mean, it's just incredible.
It's like the good old times, right? Everybody's excited about technology again.
Everyone's excited about technology again, and we have the tremendous like luxury of like we've gotten to recruit some of the folks that we worked with before at Gatsby, and so we've kind of gotten the band back together, and so we get to work on something that we care about with folks that we enjoy like working with, and you know, with an excited community. So honestly, like our lives are pretty good right now.
This has been really insightful. Thank you so much. Before we wrap up, I want to give you the opportunity to invite developers to try Mastra. Do you have any words as to how to encourage developers, to use your tool?
I would say number one, just type in npm create Mastra at latest, and like let's see what you think. But number two, I would just like think about what would be a fun thing to do, and do it. Like, don't worry about what's the important thing I need to ship, or just like, hey, like I wanted to, I don't know, like have like make a book auto recommender for me based on like I took a picture of all the books in my library, or Shane like built something that is generating a storybook for his 3-year-old daughter. Like, it's just like something that you would find interesting or fun in your life, and that like AI application could do for you, and just go build that. Like, tap into that inner child in yourself, and have fun with some cool toys.
That's awesome. Have fun, folks. Thanks so much, Sam, for joining us on Dev Propulsion Labs. You can find Mastra at Mastra AI, mastra.ai, and on GitHub. Also, check out Sam's book, Principles of Building AI Agents, which is available now on Amazon, right?
Available on
And
Amazon.
maybe for a comment, we can, actually give a book to someone for a great comment on this video. So, Sam, thanks again for being here today. Good luck with Mastra. We would love to watch you succeed and take over the world with this framework.
Victoria, thanks for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for catching yet another episode of Dev Propulsion Labs. We at Evil Martians transform growth stage startups into unicorns, build developer tools, and create open source products. If your developer tool needs help with product design, development, or SRE, visit evilmartians.com/devtools. See you in the next.